Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Handel, and I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRue. Today, we are talking with William Webb, CTO, and James Childs, VP of Corporate Business Development and Strategy for Cambridge Broadband Networks Group, representing the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition. The goal of this new group is to unlock the power of the 12 gigahertz band for 5G. Welcome, William and James.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having us.
So let's start off at the top. What is like the mission and purpose of the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition?
The coalition members all have various interests in what ultimately the outcome is for the spectrum. And by that, I mean there are spectrum owners. There are members that represent vendor technology, which is where William and I sit and have traditionally supported. In fact, Cambridge Broadband has been the only point-to-multipoint solution FCC certified in the bands. So we've had the opportunity to work with each of the spectrum owners. There's three primary owners in the US and a couple of additional people that own a few. But in essence, the mission and purpose is to get the FCC to take a fresh look at what it's doing with the 12 gigahertz band and what its destiny ought to be.
Do you have a unified recommendation for the FCC, or are you exploring options? I guess the question is, what do you want the FCC to do to enable 5G use of the 12 gigahertz band?
The commission, right prior, I guess, to the changing of the guard, right? Like most countries who have changes in leadership, there's leadership positions at the FCC that change, and then certain priorities shift and change. But in the last administration, one of their final actions was to initiate what's called an NPRM, Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. And that process allows for public comments, it allows for engineering studies, it allows for everyone, frankly, that might have interest in the band to weigh in to the commission. And they're very accommodating and very open in that process of soliciting responses. They want it to be a dynamic experience that's filled with the best of the best opinions. And I've actually been, you know, quite impressed. And I'm sure Pat, you and Gary have followed other bands and other trends in the general microwave movements in the US. And I think it's quite remarkable that, you know, we generally try to get it right, even if somebody's not perfectly always happy. And there are a lot of interesting dynamics within this band, because you have a lot of, let's say, quite powerful people that have interests here, right? It's not every day that you have a story where an Elon Musk, a Charlie Ergen, and a Michael Dell are all part of it, right? It is kind of interesting. So for us, as a vendor of technology in the band, we're looking for the commission to evaluate in a fair way the nature of the changes since the band's auction period, because the late 90s, where we're at today, there's miles and miles of difference between what technology was present then and what's available now.
So the FCC has already allocated a lot of mid-band spectrum in the sub-6 gigahertz range. So why do we need more mid-band spectrum?
For one, it's interesting that the term mid-band spectrum in relation to mobility has changed. Because remember, 600 and 700 and 800 megahertz were part of the kind of 3G and then 4G evolution. So what is mid-band today? It's actually quite higher, you know, right? I mean, I remember where there were significant debates of whether or not we could get things to work at 1.9 gigahertz and 2.5 gigahertz. So in all reality, for us as a global vendor of solutions, we have lots of point-to-multipoint networks with various, you know, that support backhaul for various mobile network operators at 10.5 gigahertz. And as an example, that band, it's been petitioned to be looked at a couple of times in the US. It currently supports air-to-ground radar systems. Long-term, the frequencies right here in this 10 to 13 gigahertz space are exceptionally capable of delivering long distance backhaul. And we think that's one good primary use case for it. So there's not quite enough. I guess part of the issue, Patrick, is that these systems of today utilize whatever slice of spectrum is possible, and consumption patterns are only increasing, both on the other end of fixed wireless access and the other end of mobile handsets. I mean, I don't know what those patterns are. William might have a better idea, but I would say that there's always going to be a shortage of spectrum and always going to be a drive for mobility operators in particular to position themselves to get whatever they can. I think it'll soon be a land grab clear up to 95 gigahertz.
Yeah, so the other thing to say is that here at CBNG, we're a manufacturer of fixed wireless access systems. And actually, we have product spanning the frequency bands of 10 gigahertz up to 30 gigahertz. So for us, this is in that range. This is more spectrum within the range that we already operate in, as opposed to extending beyond that range. So it makes perfect sense from a fixed wireless access point of view. It's effectively just adding on spectrum into a range that's already well used and very close to the 10 gigahertz band that's widely used all around the world for fixed wireless access.
So if I follow up on that, pull the thread a little bit, we know that there's been spectrum allocated below 6 gigahertz, but there's a scarcity of bandwidth, certainly. And is it fair to say that the 12 gigahertz band would offer more bandwidth so that whether you're talking about fixed wireless access or some other mobile application, it would provide higher data rates? Is that one of the attractions for this band?
Yeah, so generally as you go up frequency bands, the bandwidth available to you get wider. That's just a sort of a law of physics, if you like. So there's a lot more spectrum available up at 60 gigahertz. If you take 10% of the band there, that's 6 gigahertz wide, then there is a 600 megahertz, which is would only be 60 megahertz wide for 10%. So generally, as you move up the band, you do get broader bandwidths. And the amount of data that you can service or the data rates you can provide is generally directly proportional to the amount of bandwidth that you have. So it's certainly true that going up to higher frequencies will almost always result in higher data rates and more capacity, but typically shorter range. And that's always the trade-off that you make as you move around the frequency bands.
So James, you mentioned that there are other applications using this frequency band. Do you foresee any interference issues with other applications in the spectrum area, and how would those users be protected?
Sure. So Cambridge Broadband has a pretty unique perspective on this, having supported all of the spectrum operators from a terrestrial perspective that own the terrestrial licenses. So this is a great point. And co-primary, this may have been one of the earlier bands that the argument of assigning co-primary users, you know, kind of took place. That this is one of those early bands that was assigned co-primary at the time of auction, and essentially there are still users. To your point, DBS, which is Dish and DirecTV, there's still a substantial number of users that do have satellites, but we know that the satellite industry is. Under enormous pressure. I think they're losing something like 1 million subscribers a month, and people are moving to streaming TV services at a rapid pace. And so I think the arguments in reference to interference that might occur in the case of DBS operators, that is a trend that's lessening just given the changes of technology and the rapid declining of the DBS subscriber base in the United States. However, doesn't mean that their rights ought not to be considered and looked at. And I think probably what's even more important is to look at the difference between what kinds of systems from an advanced interference mitigation perspective, along with technologies like beamforming that are available in point-to-multipoint systems and smart antenna arrays, these kinds of technologies put to use in today's microwave platforms can certainly isolate where interference might occur. For instance, if I ran a smart database that knew where the Dish and DirecTV and the SpaceX satellite customers were, I could instruct my point-to-multipoint AP to avoid certain paths that might collide or cause interference to those types of users. So I think we're at a remarkable place in technology to be able to really facilitate a scenario where most people should win as the commission takes a look at how to adopt, you know, broader rules, revised rules. I don't think there's going to be a loser here. There doesn't need to be, I guess, is what I'm hoping and saying, Patrick.
What we're advocating is that this ban should be opened up through a database access system, some kind of what's called dynamic spectrum access. And if you're using that kind of an approach, then there's no reason for there to be any interference as long as the rules are set up correctly so that everybody that wants to use it consults the database. The database checks whether that usage would cause interference and only allows it if it would not cause interference. And we've seen that sort of database approach being used predominantly in CBRS in the 3.5 gigahertz band in the US. And when I last checked, there weren't any reports of interference at all yet there. So that seemed to be working. And it's also been used in the TV white space area, although that hasn't been very vibrant. But again, I don't know of any reported interference. So I think that approach can be shown and set up in such a way that there is no interference, or the risk can be set to be extraordinarily low. The only question that follows from that is if you set the interference risk too low, then effectively you block usage from happening that could otherwise have occurred. So it becomes a balance then of to what extent are you willing to tolerate a little bit of interference versus enabling wider use of the band. But there's certainly no reason to fear interference with a kind of a dynamic spectrum access approach.
I want to say tomorrow there's engineering studies that will be released to talk more about this. But if you kind of envision that one of the use cases is a rooftop to the southern sky, which is the DBS user, there should be no reason that an indoor microcell of some sort that, you know, points from a ceiling down to support mobility indoors, as an example, those two solutions should be able to coexist quite easily. Without probably very much dispute in relation to those two living under the same roof, if you will.
So James, you mentioned Elon Musk earlier, and certainly SpaceX, as I understand it, is using this band, and it's a different scenario than direct broadcast satellite to the home, because you've got satellites moving across the sky. Does Elon Musk have a position in this race or advocacy in one direction or another? And how would Starlink be accommodated with this proposal?
Well, yeah, no, that's a great question. And certainly I wouldn't feign to consider myself as a representative of that position, actually. Although, again, like in my original comments, Cambridge Broadband certainly believes that everybody can have a seat at the table in this discussion, then there's win-wins to be found. So you're right in that a recent request was made to the commission to allow for a bit of an expanded use, from my understanding. And in the case of this satellite example, this is a dish that sits and looks at the northern sky, right? So you've got DBS looking at the southern, and you've got Elon Musk kind of in the northern sky. But again, it is, in my opinion, a scenario where, given the systems of today, there are no reason that I can't see that a tower with an AP at 100 feet serving a point to multipoint purpose between, client AP and a client, or various aspects of mobility, particularly indoor mobility, could be easily supported without vast interference concerns there. Now, we could all speculate on what the commission's likely to do. I think what they need to do is follow the science, as we say, kind of in a COVID world, right? So following the science, you look at the engineering reports that'll be available over the next week. And I think most people will agree that this band will allow for multiple people to use it effectively. And also to in the US leadership push to sort of do everything they can to be at the top of the pack in reference to 5G, period. This is a great stepping stone to that objective.
So another question, could the 12 gigahertz band offer new possibilities, let's say, to expand unlicensed opportunistic spectrum access?
So I think it's an interesting question to tease out what unlicensed means in a world of dynamic spectrum access. So if we take a look at CBRS, for example, the access scheme of 3.5 gigahertz, then that does have effectively an unlicensed element to it. It's the lowest tier. It's sometimes called general authorized access. You still need to consult a database, but once you've consulted that, you can use it as long as nobody else is, but you don't have to pay for a license. And I think you could certainly set up this band in a similar manner if you chose to do so, with a number of different tiers of access, with unlicensed essentially being the lowest tier, sat below people who choose to pay for access. Or you could choose to have everyone having to have some kind of a license, but then using the database to get access. I think that's entirely up to the FCC. But if we look at what unlicensed is generally used for, it's generally used for relatively short range, sort of in building kind of stuff, Wi-Fi and that sort of thing. There has, of course, been a recent very large grant of the 6 gigahertz band to Wi-Fi. So it's not clear there's a strong need for a large increase in the unlicensed spectrum availability at this point in time. But that can always be changed. If you have a database system, you can change the rules of access as and when you want to anyway. So if during the course of time it becomes clear that actually more of an unlicensed kind of approach would be preferential, then that can be configured during the lifetime of the band.
Yeah, one possible route the commission could take is to assign the satellite interests a portion of the band. The terrestrial guys who have long held the licenses and made significant investments in them, a portion of the band, and then to reserve, as William mentioned, certain channels that could be utilized in a lightly licensed or dynamic sharing type scenario. And I could see the commission taking a pretty serious look at how to do that.
So we've seen over the last couple years, I think, maybe longer, that the FCC has been pretty aggressive at allocating millimeter wave spectrum for new opportunity within the US, and I think the world is kind of following in that path. One argument might be, let's just go use this fertile millimeter wave spectrum where we don't have to worry about interference, as opposed to 12 gigahertz where you're trying to figure out how all these different people can coexist peacefully. Maybe William, what from a technical sense are the trade-offs between 12 gigahertz and millimeter wave?
Yeah, so millimeter wave sort of strictly is roughly the band 30 gigahertz up to about 300 gigahertz. And what you get, as I mentioned earlier, is as you move up in frequency, you get an ever shortening range, but an ever increasing amount of bandwidth. It also generally becomes more expensive to use the band because the RF equipment that you need tends to become more difficult to make and therefore more expensive. So there are those kind of trade-offs. But to come back to your first point of why not just pick a band where there is no other usage? By and large, the bands are pretty well used right up to getting on for about 100 gigahertz. Actually, when I was at Ofcom 15 years ago, which is the UK equivalent of the FCC, I did a study into where do you have to go to in order to get to a point where you can say, actually, the spectrum really is unused and anyone can just dive in. And it was about 90 plus gigahertz that you had to move to before you got to that point. Below that, the bands were in use by quite a wide range of different users, from satellite to fixed links to military to all sorts of other things. So you'd have to move up to probably 100 gigahertz or more. And the problem there is the range becomes very short. You're talking about typically 100 meters or so, something like that. So whilst there's enormous bandwidth, it's really not very usable for any practical kind of wide area systems. It would be fine within a building, within a factory, for example, that kind of thing, but not for a fixed wireless access solution or indeed for a wide area mobile solution.
So what are your thoughts on how long it might take the FCC to rule on this, and what would be your expected timeline after that for commercial use?
Yeah, so Cambridge Broadband has a commercial solution today and has deployed it nationally with each of the terrestrial folks that have deployed on the band. So the FCC decision, it's sort of anybody's guess as to how fast they want to move through an administrative review process. I mean, there's a very prescribed, as all folks on this call and probably listening understand, there is a defined period of comments that come in from the public and then reply periods. And then the commission tends to take a proper time to evaluate all the aspects of business case, regulatory, and engineering, and then we'll come back with a decision. I personally, maybe I'm a bit optimistic, but I would hope that this would occur in this calendar year. I think there's plenty of time for the commission to review reports that are going to be released in the coming weeks from all parties, and hopefully when we get into the fall, we can have much more clarity about it. That's sort of my gut level, though, Patrick, on timing from here.
Well, we all well understand that spectrum is a scarce resource, and I certainly don't envy the FCC trying to adjudicate the best uses in all these cases. This is a fascinating discussion, and one point I take away is certainly the technology today is a lot different than when this band was first maybe defined and uses assigned. So it seems like we have some possibilities here. So thank you very much, William and James, for taking the time to introduce us to the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition and explain the details of the proposal and the various trade-offs. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
And we want to thank our listeners for joining us today on the Frequency Matters podcast. Stay tuned for another interesting episode coming your way.